Well, are you happy today? Thank you for being here this evening. I know it's bad weather outside, a lot of snow, and I'm grateful for that. I wished it would snow year-round. Happy, right? This past week, I got a chance to go and spend some time with my mom. And one of the things I got a chance to do was to go through all of my dad's files and a lot of his sermons and Bible class materials and things. He wrote Bible class materials for all 66 books of the Bible. He was a very, very, very diligent Bible student. My memories of my dad are primarily sitting at a desk with a little lamp on, even at nighttime, and always studying his Bible, always taking notes, always thinking ahead of somebody that he might be able to teach, or some class that he was going to teach at the services, or always have a sermon ready. You could go into any place on a visiting. He traveled all over the world. And anywhere he went, a lot of times because he'd go into these little small churches, they wouldn't have anybody to actually preach a sermon, so they would just ask Dad to preach. And so he always had sermons ready, so he was always working up sermons, even though he wasn't a preacher. He always enjoyed being able to do things like that. And going over his materials, I brought suitcase home of his lessons and Bible materials. Going through there, I noticed a continuous theme in many of his lessons, and that was to be content. And I suppose of all the lessons I knew about my dad, it was that he was always content. I never saw him ruffled. I never saw him anxious or out of sorts. I never once ever heard him raise his voice to anyone. I saw him raise his hand many times. To me, with spankings, and they were well deserved. But the idea that I looked at his life and I saw contentment there. Us kids who were raised up, we often heard him say things like, "This too shall pass." In other words, the trial at the moment, it'll come and it'll go. But who will you be at the end of it? And that was what he's always stressing to us: you build character in the midst of trial, and so accept the trial as something that's good. It'll, like James chapter 1 says, we go through many trials, and the testing of our faith produces patience, and patience has its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So I learned a lot of things about my dad, but looking through the notes, I just saw that recurring theme, and I got to thinking, I wished I had become more like him in that way. And I just kind of resolved by looking through that material that I'm going to work on my contentment. And so to do that, I just started thinking about more of some passages that I saw in his notes and others that I studied for myself. And particularly in the book of Philippians, I saw a recurring thought there, and I want to spend some time there with you this evening. Maybe it is that you need to learn a little bit more about contentment as well. And so if you'll remember the song that you just sang, "Happiness is the Lord," at the second stanza, you'll notice the words that said, "Happiness is a new creation, Jesus and me in close relation," the fellowship that we have there with Him. And I want you to think about that, because it goes on to say, having a part in His salvation, happiness is the Lord. And to be happy is the way to be content. But notice also it says, real joy is mine, no matter if teardrops fall or start. I have found the secret. What is that? Noticing that even in the passage it says it's, and then it kind of leaves you hanging. And what it is it's Jesus. Jesus in my heart in the song, but it is just simply Jesus in my life. Jesus in me. And if I have Christ in me, that's what the book of Philippians is going to teach us about how to be content. It's going to tell us that theme all the way through the book. But we'll just look primarily at one chapter in chapter 4. But I want you to spend just a few moments thinking with you about if you're in your life, if you are always anxious, if you are always maybe complaining, maybe you have too much of an acid tongue where you are so quick to to condemn others or to bring about their flaws or their warts and comparing yourselves with them or maybe to bring them down to lift you up, as sometimes we all do. I'd like to know that that's a flaw that sometimes I have that I need to work on. And I want you to think with me about this idea of just learning to be content. And that means we're going to define it, the idea of satisfaction in life, where you're not having to criticize others or to complain about things going on in your life. It's an age-old problem. You remember from the Garden of Eden, what was the very first thing that Satan convinced Eve to think about? That somehow God's holding out on you. That you can be as wise as God, and so if you would just eat this fruit, then you would come up to, you know, maybe God's level and have His wisdom. And so God's holding out on you. You're not happy because of this. So He brings about this disgruntledness or this discontent in Eve that led to her sin. And it just kind of goes all the way through the Old Testament until we finally come to the story of John the Baptist, and when the soldiers and others would come out and ask, what should we do to show repentance? When he would say, repent, for the kingdom is at hand, and then he would challenge them in their various areas of their life. And the soldiers would come up and say, well, what about us? And it was John the Baptist who says to them, and he says, do not intimidate anyone, or notice it says, accuse falsely. And he says, be content with your wages. Something about being a soldier in that day where they could intimidate people by obviously their military strength and their muscles and the things that they would have. And there's no doubt that they could go up and they could make demands on people by the fact they were bearing swords and just being who they were. And so this intimidation factor, and John says, nuh-uh, that's not how a soldier's supposed to be. In fact, he says, be content even with your wages. In other words, be satisfied with your life. Notice the word, archaeo, is the word for content that we'll be looking at tonight. And notice it says, to be possessed of unfailing strength. And he's not talking about outward physical strength. He's talking about inward strength. You're only going to be content when you are strong inside of you, when you have built that character in you to where you could be content. In other words, it doesn't make any difference what's going on with the storms on the outside. It's who I am and I'm in control on the inside. To be strong, to be satisfied, is what archaeo means. And I'd like for us to think with us tonight about what John was trying to teach them is also what Jesus is and Paul are going to try to teach us. In the book of 1 Timothy, an interesting passage is there where it talks about, now, and it uses this, I call it the dynamic duo. Now, godliness with contentment, you notice the word godliness there, and look down below, the godliness, at least in my mind, it's the idea of God towardness or looking up to God and in a sense smiling. You look up to God and you're not cowering in fear. You're looking at God and saying, Jesus and me in close relation. There's a godliness that's there, and so it leads to a smile on your heart and it leads to the peace that surpasses understanding. I'll be content when I'm right with God, and then and only then, in fact, I believe this with all my heart, godliness and contentment have to go hand in hand. I am not going to be content until I am first godly. And there's a lot of people in the world who are not religious at all, and they might say they're content, and they might have that passive attitude. They can kind of sit back in a rocking chair and twiddle their thumbs and be content with the world as it goes by. But they're not truly content until you are at peace with God. That peace that surpasses understanding only comes when I have a relation with God, and then I can have that inward strength, the possession of inward unfailing strength, because now I am at one with God. And so godliness with contentment, therefore, is great gain. If I've got that relation with Him, then I can be at peace with those around me and with myself included. And if I have that, then it says, well, okay, then I came into this world, I accept the fact that I came into this world buck naked and I'm leaving that way. In other words, I came into this world with nothing and I'm leaving with nothing as far as the possessions of this world are concerned. He says, but having food and clothing, I will be archaeo. I will be content. I will have that strength within where I don't have to complain about life. I don't have to downgrade others and be condescending toward other people. That I can actually be in control because I understand what life is. I get it. It's all about me and my relationship to God. And then if I've got that, than I can be in relationships with others and with myself. And I like the world's greatest philosopher to me has always been Winnie the Pooh. He is just my favorite philosopher, and I like this cartoon. And it goes like this. What day is it? Asked Pooh. And Piglet squeaks out. He says, it's today. And Pooh says, oh, that's my favorite day. If you think about that, there's this idea, if you think about the story of Winnie the Pooh always, he was just always a happy little bear, wasn't he? And he never had complaints about other people. He never put other people down. And that's why I like him. It's just the idea that he could go through life and life was good. And I want to be sort of like that. I want to be able to have that contentment in life to where life is good. Today is the best day. And if tomorrow comes, then tomorrow will be my favorite day. And not have to sit and think I've got to put other people down to lift myself up or to complain about what's going on in my life. Contentment. In Hebrews chapter 13, I'm going to read two verses with you tonight. Hebrews 13 and then Philippians chapter 4. In Hebrews chapter 13, I want you to get your Bible over there with me, please. And I want you to look there particularly at verse 5, but there's going to be a context and we'll go back and look at that. In Hebrews chapter 13 and in verse 5, I get my Bible turned here, it says, let your conduct be without covetousness, be content with such things as you have, for, in other words, here's the reason, he himself has said, I will never leave you or forsake you, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I'll not fear, what can man do to me? In other words, you can look at that and you can say, be content. Why? Why? Because the Lord has said, he made a promise to me, I'll always be with you. In other words, Jesus and me in close relation, happiness is the Lord. If I've got that. But, there's got to be more to it than that. And you go back and read what that to it was. In verse 1, he said, let brotherly love continue. So there you begin to see, there's something on the outside before I work on verse 5, the inside. Before I can say, everything's okay. Everything, I'm content, life's good. Why? Because Jesus is with me. But before you get to that inward, you got to go to the outward. He says, let brotherly love continue. So in other words, with my brother, I'm going to love my brother. All of you on the outside, I'm going to love you. I'm going to say good things about you. I'm not going to sit and downgrade you and complain about you. If there's something, a flaw in your life, I'm going to come to you and I will help you to deal with that. I'm not going to go tell other people about it. I'm going to help you with it. Second, I'm going to be hospitable. There might be entertaining angels unaware, as it goes on to say. And so, there it is. I'm going to be hospitable. I'm going to be outgoing toward others, even to strangers. Not just my brethren, but to strangers as well. Verse 3 says, and also be caring. He talks about remember the prisoners as if chained with them. You like that, don't you? As with chained with them. In other words, I'm not going to look down and say, oh man, there was a bad guys. No, I'm going to look at them and say, I'm going to as if I'm chained with them. And it's almost as if that they're my brethren and they've been martyred and they're in prison here. And so I'm going to be remembering them. So I'm even looking at those who've been downcast or those who've got things going bad in their life. I'm going to even remember them. So there then finally in verse 4, marriage is honorable. The bed is undefiled. Whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. So in this case, even my mate, I'm going to be faithful. Marriage is an honorable thing. I'm not going to go out and be unfaithful to my wife or the husband. And I'm thinking about others on the outside, even in my wife and even in my home. Now that said, with all of those outward things, thinking outwardly, it's then I can go to verse 5. In other words, those first four are godliness. And now this is also contentment in this way, that now I can be content. I don't have to be covetous. I got Jesus Christ in my life. So I found the secret. It's Jesus in my heart, just in my life. And if I've got that, think about it, brethren. What are you going to complain about life about? If you've got all those things working that you're always thinking about your brethren, you're thinking about strangers, you're thinking about prisoners, you're thinking about your family, and you're doing things for them, and then and only then can you then say, okay, I'm looking in and Jesus is also in my heart. And so what have I got to complain about? Be content, he said there in verse 5. Be satisfied. Then we flip back to Philippians 4. Look at our last passage for the evening. In Philippians chapter 4, let's just read verses 10 through 13. We'll actually go back to verse 8 following in just a minute, but just start in verse 10. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Think about those Macedonian brethren. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to what? To be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere, in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Stop. Have you learned the secret? Is it Jesus in your heart? I look at the Apostle Paul and he tells me, and this is an amazing thing to me, the Apostle Paul had to learn something. We often think of him as just that super saint, that great hero of our faith, and there just was nobody ever better than the Apostle Paul. And yet, here it is, decades after his conversion, and what is he telling us? He's telling us, in my walk, in my journey with Jesus Christ, I have had to learn things. And one of the things I have learned, I have had to learn to be content. If you stop and think about the Apostle Paul's life, his early days in his childhood when he was sent from Tarsus to Jerusalem to be schooled with Gamaliel. And during that time, finally even when Christianity was taking off and Paul was seemingly not very content. He was always on the go. He was always on a mission. And that was, he was discontented until Christianity was exterminated. He was the Orkin man of the first century. He was going to exterminate Christianity if he could. And so you could see him as a very discontented man in that regard. Until he meets the Lord, and then all of a sudden he has to do a 180, and now he's going to have to start learning some things in life. There was a lot of things about Paul's life that were probably great warts that he had to work on. This, I seem to be, was one of them. And he had to learn contentment. And he says, not that I speak in regard to need, I have learned in whatever state I am. He's not talking about Texas, North Carolina, or Minnesota. He's talking about the state of contentment. In whatever state I am, whatever position, whatever's going on in my surroundings, my life, my environment, I had to learn to be content. I don't imagine that was an easy thing for a man like Paul. Can you imagine a man who was such a free man and outgoing and going out to preach everywhere he possibly could, and then he started to be shackled and had to be confined and sit in these rented houses and even in dungeons at times with lacerations on his back. And all of a sudden now he's in stocks like he was there in Philippians 4, or the city of Philippi. Now he had to learn contentment. He wanted to be out and about. He couldn't stand this constrainment, but now all of a sudden he had to be content. He had to learn this. And so what was his secret? If Paul could kind of give us a little insight in that. You know, there's a lot of things I could have said, I could just never do that. One of my dearest friends for many years here was a guy named Gus Wegman. And I look at Gus and I saw him, and as you listen to his life, he was a quadriplegic. But he wasn't a quadriplegic until he was 31 years of age. And he was an outgoing guy. He was 6'4". He was a great athlete, in fact, in school, and he loved to get outdoors. He loved to always do all kinds of things. He was quite the guy. But then one day he had a diving accident. He snapped his neck, and he was paralyzed from the neck down. And so many times, as those of you who knew him, you were around him, he was a positive type of guy, and it was just amazing. But I looked at him, and many times I used to say, Gus, I could never do what you do. And he would say to me, oh, yes, you can. Yes, you would. You would have to. You think I like doing this? You think I like being in this condition? But for about 5 years, I tried to commit suicide. I hated this confinement. I hated this body of mine. I hated everything about it. And so I tried over and over again to commit suicide. And he said, until it finally dawned on me, wait a minute, what are you doing? You commit suicide, you're going to hell. And so that's when he got his Bible. He started reading. He started studying. And that's when he started searching. And he searched from one church to another, to another, to another, until one day I got a phone call, and he said, hey, can you come down here and talk to me? And Gus became a Christian. And he realized that there's more to life than just this physical body. And I looked at that and I said, you know, Gus, I could just never do that. I couldn't do what you have to go through. Not being able to feed yourself or bathe yourself or do any of these things without help from somebody else. And he just simply would say, yes, you could, and yes, you would. And you know, when I say I could never do that, basically saying I couldn't be content in that kind of situation, being a quad or whatever. And the reality is, yeah, you could. Yeah, you would. You'd have to. And so, what are you going to do? Gus would tell me about the Apostle Paul and how he was his hero. And so, I read in Dad's notes, and I saw the same thing in Dad's notes. And so, I want to show you some things that I've learned from him and from him. In Philippians chapter 4, there's nothing more dramatic to me than the life of an individual. And you see this personal, this personality come to life. And Paul kind of lets us in on his life and lets us see how he learned to be content. Whether abased or abounding, he learned to be content. How did he do that? We've already read the passage, but I want you to see it again, maybe from a fresh eye. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. In other words, you couldn't help me, even though you wanted to. Go back and read the story. The Macedonians were, if you read 2 Corinthians, the Macedonians were poor people. And so they lacked opportunity in some cases, and so he said, I know that. But he says, but I want you to know something about me. It's not that I speak in regard to need. Even though you can't send me funds at the time or you can't help me out in some way now, I want you to know about me, and here's who I am. I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I want you to notice all the personal I's in this thing. There's eight of them. Where he says, I speak in regard to need. I have learned in whatever state I am in order to be content. Paul's telling us a little bit about himself. And he goes to say, I know how to be abased. The word know there is that word gnosso, where the idea is, I've learned this and I understand it, and I get it, I've connected the dots. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, and to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things. Now notice what it says. Through Christ who strengthens me. I can do all things. Now I want you to notice the context in which he makes that statement. We often hear people all the time talking about, I can do all, they love to quote Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and they have no idea what the context is. He's talking in the context about the Macedonians wanting to help him, but he says, look, I want you to know about me, and that is, I have, over the course of my life, I've had to learn the hard way some of these hard lessons, and that is, I've learned to be content, but it wasn't always this easy. It didn't come naturally to Paul. I had to learn it. And what did he learn? He says, in Jesus Christ, I can do all things. Why? Because he made the promise to me, as Hebrews 13 verse 5 says, I will never leave you or forsake you. And so whether it's in the good times or the bad times, I have learned that Christ will always be by my side. He'll always be there to give me just enough strength to bear up under whatever load I've got. And therefore, I have just learned, in that case, he said, to be happy. Happiness is the Lord. That I can accept whatever comes my way, whether it's sunshine or whether it's rain. I can do that with his help. I can do, if I was to become a quadriplegic tonight, I can do that with Christ's help. I think about Eric going to prison. That wasn't easy, was it? That was a hard thing, wasn't it, Eric? You might say, well, I just don't think I could stand that constrainment, that confinement. I couldn't demand every day head counts and going into my cell every night and slamming the doors and all those things. I think I'd go crazy. But you can do it, can't you? With Jesus Christ, you can do it. And that's one of the things we need to understand is, in the best of times or the worst of times, I need to be content no matter what's happening to me at this moment. I realize I'm talking tonight to people, and every one of you have your own story. Paul had his personal story and the drama of that. You have your personal story. You have your ins and your outs and your ups and your downs. I used an illustration of a roller coaster. Is that roller coaster going up or is it coming down? I don't know. But the illustration is whether you're getting ready to go up and it's going to be good on the top, or whether it's you're hitting the bottom and you're sliding down, whether you're in the mountaintop or whether you're in the valley. The Bible tells us, I have learned the secret. I know, he says, how to be abased, and I know how to abound. What does that mean? What are we talking about here? When he says, I know how to be abased, that's an interesting word. It simply means, I like the idea where it says to depress, to push low, and the idea is even to be stripped of rank. The concept is to assign to a lower rank. Here you are up here, maybe a general, and now you're demoted to a butt private. There's a story there of, I won't tell the story of this man named Sergeant Burroughs, but he was just simply stripped of his rank, and he was court-martialed out of the military because of something that he did. But here's just the idea. One day he's sitting there high and doing well. Next thing, everything is stripped from him. And I like the idea that when we think about our lives, there's things going pretty well sometimes in our life, and then all of a sudden something comes along and we get stripped of our rank. I think about the Apostle Paul, if you're looking at his story in Philippians chapter 3, if you go back earlier in the chapter, he says, though I might have confidence in the flesh, if anyone else thinks he may have confidence in the flesh, I more so. In other words, I'm going to tell you about myself. I'm going to tell you about when I was a high-ranking individual. I want to tell you what was going on in my life, and then how all of a sudden the rug was pulled out from under me, the bars were stripped off of my rank, and now I became a nobody. He says, I was circumcised the eighth day. In other words, that was a true Jew. He wasn't a proselyte, in other words. I was of the stock of Israel. I was of the tribe of Benjamin. Look at everything that Paul, and that doesn't mean too much to us sitting here in the Gentile world, but if you were a Jew of the first century, you'd be going, whoa, boy, check, 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 check. This guy, he had everything going his way. He was a Hebrew of the Hebrews, which probably meant he was able to speak the language, which was on the way out in that world. Concerning the law, he was a Pharisee. In other words, he was one of the separated ones, which is what the word Pharisee means. He was among the elite of zeal. He was persecuting the church, and so he would have been a high ranking among the Sanhedrin. Concerning righteousness and the law, he said, I was blameless. He'd have been one of those guys that went to Jesus and says, what lack I yet? And so looking at Paul, look at the rank that he's at, and yet all of a sudden watch the roller coaster. Watch when it goes down. We owe the story in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 24 through 27, where he goes through all this catalog, this litany of things that he went through for Christ's sake. How Jesus stripped him, like he told Ananias to go tell Paul how many things he must suffer for my name's sake. And now all of a sudden, look what happens to him. And this is not all that happened to him. This is just some. He says, I received 40 stripes minus one, five times. Three times I was beaten with rods, in other words, from the Jews and now from the Romans. Once I was stoned. We know that story. Three times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep, in weariness and toil and sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst and fastings often, in cold and nakedness, and I just listed only a few of them there. And the idea is, you know, in perils of the things, in perils of this, in perils of that. And with all of that, in other words, what God came in and did was just strip him of all the things that he had going on in this world. He was on cloud nine, and now all of a sudden he's in a dungeon. From the top of the mountain to the bottom of the valley. And Paul says, now how could you deal with that? And Paul said, I had to learn that. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for me to go through the things that I went through. But I learned in each one of those, each trial and affliction that came into my life, I learned to depend more and more and more and more on Jesus Christ. And by doing that, I learned to be content. I learned to accept whatever came my way, that I would accept it. I would learn to be abased. And he says, but you know, I'll also learn to abound. And it's interesting, you look up the word, it just simply means to overflow, to have an abundance, to be richly supplied. And I like the illustration they give in Thayer's, which says, of a flower from a bud to a full bloom. Think about that. It starts from that little bud, and all of a sudden it just, in other words, it overflows. It just blossoms out to the abounding of it. And that's, if you see that picture of that in fast motion, a slow motion or whatever it is, and then it just opens up, time lapse. And so Paul is saying that's kind of the way it is. Sometimes when you're down, you go from down where he says, as far as spiritually is concerned, I was a blasphemer, a persecutor, I was an insolent man. I was the chief of sinners. In other words, you can't get more low than I was low. But from that, when I was in the city of Damascus, and from that day on, he began to teach me to depend on him. And by doing that, I began to blossom. I began to see the richness and to count my blessings and to name them one by one. And the doing of that, I began to see the grace of God richly supplying me over and over and over again. Paul wasn't Paul as we know him from the early days. He had to grow into that. He had to learn that. And by doing that, going from down to rising up, he learned to be content. And by doing that, he didn't complain about things. He didn't complain about other people. He wasn't always looking to nitpick about things going on in other people's lives. And so he said, I had to learn. I have learned to be content. In whatever state I am, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry. It's not natural for any of us to naturally be content. Now, we might be born with, you're not a type 1 or type A type personality. You might be a type Z personality where you're just, they have to take your pulse to see if you're still living. You might just be laid back that way. That doesn't mean you're content. We're not born with this great thing called contentment in our hearts. We have to learn it like everybody else does. And so to learn it means I have to study it. I have to think about it. I have to work on it. Go back and look at the verse again in verses 11 through 13 where he says, I have learned in whatever state to be content. In verse 12, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry. And by implication, also in verse 13, it says, I have learned I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But notice some of the translations I gave there, the NIV, the Holman, the ESV, and the New American Standard use the word secret. The word, if you look it up, it just simply is the idea of unfolding the mysteries. The mystery, their secret that's there, and now he's learned it. He searched in his life to find and unfold this the secret to being content. I'm sure at the early stages of his life, he was anything but. But in time, he learned it, and he gives us the clues. He actually tells us the three great clues to the secret of being content. So if you're not content, if sometimes you spend your days kind of complaining about things, being derogatory toward other people, maybe family, he says, let me help you tell you how I learned it. He learned it the hard way, perhaps, but he's giving us the inside scoop. And he says, let me tell you how you do that. In Philippians 4, in the same reading, just go back to verse 6 through 8, where he says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your heart and your mind in Christ. And then he says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely or just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's anything virtuous, anything praiseworthy, meditate, think about these things. For me to stop complaining, for me to stop griping and grumbling about myself or others or never being content with what I am, it starts with not listening to certain people, primarily my inner self. If your natural inclination is just to gripe and grumble and complain and to put other people down, to lift yourself up, which is what a lot of people do, then what you got to do is you got to get rid of that guy that's on your shoulder. You just got to get rid of him. And you got to start thinking about what you're thinking about. What is that? Well, he says if there's any virtue or any praiseworthy thing, let's suppose you have a difficult boss. What are you going to do? You don't like your job. I hate this job. Well, you can go about it that way, I suppose, but that's called complaining. That's discontent. Instead, you can say, I like this job, or at least maybe I don't like it so much, but you know what? I got a job. There's a lot of people that don't. 93 million people are out of work in this country. Thank God that I've got a job. Or thank God that I've got a boss that can tell me maybe someday, I don't like the way he does it or she does it, but I'm going to at least be thankful for what I've got. Maybe I don't have good health. Maybe there are some things broken in my life. Maybe it's physical. Maybe it's mental. But at least I've got a life itself. And I'm grateful to be alive. Considering the circumstances of many people, maybe at this very moment who are on hospice or whatever their situation might be, or they're quadriplegics, at least I'm grateful that I can get up and I can feed myself. Thank God for that. There might be a situation where you're stressful at home. Maybe the marriage is not what it ought to be. And if that be the case, then at least the idea that God has given you another family as well. That's us. Maybe things are not going well under the roof of your house, but they are under the roof of this house. That you can come and you can be with people who say, I love you. What can I do for you? Can I help you? You're a member of a greater family. In fact, this family that you're own physically in, you're going to have to give that up. But this family, you get to keep forever. What a joy that is. And so count blessings for that. I hear people sometimes tell me, well, I can't do much. I don't have any abilities. What do I know? And I come back to say, well, what can you do? Brighten the corner where you are. Savor God's blessings. Count your many blessings. Name them one by one. Choose what you're going to think about and count your blessings. But then he goes and he tells us a second thing there in Philippians 4. He says, I have learned in secret. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Let's just rehash that for a second. You know, when you think about the negatives and the positives, you say, you know, Paul tells us a little bit about his life when he said, you know, I had this thorn in the flesh and I didn't like it. I was discontented with it. And I kept appealing to God again and again and again. God, take this thorn from me. And finally, God comes down and he tells me the answer to my request. He said, I'll answer your prayer, but I want you to know that I'm not going to take it away. And therefore, I want you to know that if I did take it away, it probably would destroy you. So I'm going to leave it there because in weakness, you'll be made strong. My grace is sufficient for you. So no matter what's going on in your life, if you're discontent about something, whether it's a physical or spiritual thorn in your flesh, look at what God's doing for you. And he says, my grace will always be, I will never leave you or forsake you. My grace will be sufficient for you. The Apostle Paul also said, the things which happened to me, you'll go back and read Philippians 1, the first chapter there in that book. And he says, you know, it was bad. I got arrested and I just thought, man, I can't be out preaching. But he says, you know what? Look what it did. It turned out wonderfully. Yes, I'm still confined. He's writing it from a prison cell. But he says, look what it did for others who see me in my chains and they take boldness to go out and to preach the gospel as well. What a wonderful thing has happened here. He says, yeah, it's happened in my chains, but it's turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. And so, great. If I have to sit in prison for the rest of my life, as long as the gospel is being spread and people are taking courage by my chains, then I'll sit here in the chains and I'll be content with that. You got to love that Christ gives us his strength. He's telling us, use me. Jesus and me in close relation. If I can find my strength in Jesus Christ, he'll keep his word that I'll never leave you or forsake you. And if I can know that whether I'm a quadriplegic or whether I'm sitting in prison or whether I'm going through some other trial physically or that Jesus is going to be there, and I'll never ever to be complaining about anything. I got no reason to complain about anything. Paul taught me that. And the final clue before we close is this. Christ himself said in chapter 1, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. There you find the secret about I can do all things through Christ. He told us that earlier basically in this passage. For me to live is Christ and to die is gain. He would say in that reading, I would rather go ahead and die and be with Jesus Christ. That's far better. But he says, for your sake, God's going to let me stay in this world for a while longer. And so I want you to know some things. And I want you to ask yourself the question that Paul probably asked himself. How would you fill in the blank? For me to live is blank. How would you fill that in? For me to live is blank. Is it my education? Is that my pursuit in my life, my career? Well, to do that is to die is lost because your career, your job, everything is going to be gone when you die. What about if for me to live is my job? What if it is my ministry, even what I've got here? If that's what I'm living for, if that's the purpose for my life, then I want you to know is that it's going to be for loss. If all it is I'm just living for this and this is my world and I'm a workaholic and I'm always going to work and you might justify it by saying I'm providing for my family, but if that's your life, if that's what defines you, then it's going to be for loss. There's got to be more to life than that. What about if it is my family? People say, well, hey, you've got to live for family, right? No, you don't. That might be a pursuit that God has laid on me to be a good husband, to be a good father and so forth, but that doesn't define me. That's not who I am. My life is not just confined to my family, because if that's true, then I'm going to lose that as well. And then the fourth one you might throw up, what about sports or music? And you can throw in all kinds of worldly things here. Now, obviously, that would be a loss as well. But what if? What if we could define it something beyond the outward? What if we could define it like the Apostle Paul did and said, for me to live is Christ to live in me? Then he would be able to say, with great contentment, then it's gain. Godliness with contentment is great gain. With Jesus Christ as the center of my life, he is giving me all the strength that I need, then there'll be no complaining in my life whatsoever. He is my everything. I'd like for us to think about the 7-day challenge. I didn't show you that a moment ago, but just the idea of, I'd like to consider with you just for a moment, I'm going to take up the challenge myself. For the next 7 days, you can't complain about anything. Nothing. You can't complain about your wife. You can't complain about the kids screaming. You can't complain about anything. You're going to have to learn to be content, at least for 7 days. I'd like for you to think about that. Maybe we can kind of do this together. That no negative thoughts. And if a negative thought comes up, you immediately get rid of it. And you go back and you count your blessings. And for every, if you do slip up and you do make a mistake, then you got to count 10 blessings, right? So if you catch yourself being negative towards something, then you got to come up with 10 positives. That'll help counter it. And so if you're addicted to negativity, you got a long week ahead of you. But the idea is that if you learn to be content by choosing your thoughts, I'm going to think on things that are true and honorable and just and pure and lovely and of good report. I'm going to think about those things. For me to live is Christ and to die is gain. I'm going to think about those things. I can do all things through Jesus who strengthens me. Think about those things. And if you'll do that, Paul said that's how he learned to be content. I need that. I need that in my life. Again, I said we need our heroes. And, you know, my dad was my hero, and I looked at his life, and I thought, I wish I could be content like him. And then I go back and look at his notes, and he had notes like this in there. I thought, okay, there it is. I found the secret in his life. Now here's the secret that's got to be in mine. And I've just shared it with you. It was from the Apostle Paul himself. He had to learn contentment, and he had to learn it through these steps that he took. These are the secrets unleashed, unveiled. And if you'll learn those three things from the Apostle Paul, then you can kind of start curbing that negativity that's going on in your life. Learn to be content. Be satisfied with yourself. It didn't mean you don't have goals in life. We have a holy discontent in our life. I think that's what God wants us to have. It's a holy discontent. I'm discontented in certain things. I want to be better. I want to strive to grow in grace and knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. But when it comes to the negatives of my life and downgrading other people, I got to stop that. That's wrong and that's sinful. And so I want to be content with those things, and that's what I need to do. Look at the song we're about to sing that Tim's going to lead us in. It goes like this. When peace like a river attends my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, I'll learn to say, it is well with my soul. If I can say that, if I can sing this and say it, at the end of this week, you'll see it at the end of the last chart that you're going to see on this song. If you take the challenge that you're going to be content in life, then sing the song with the intent that it's going to lead to contentment in your life, that you're going to be satisfied because Jesus is in your heart. Let's stand and sing this song. The chorus will be sung last. So let's all stand and sing, When Peace Like a River.